Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Charlene Aiken, bar number 35396, and I represent the respondent, Kelly Jewett, in this case. There are two issues here today that I'd like to discuss, the first being that the trial court applied an incorrect legal standard in this initial determination of parental rights case. And the second is that, alternatively, if 1410.129, which is a modification of parenting time, was the correct legal standard, then the relocation is in the child's best interest. The incorrect legal standard here was applied. The applicable legal standard under Spomber v. Jewett and 1410.124 tells us that the court is required to consider the location in which each parent intends to live, specifically the physical proximity of the parties to each other, and allocate parental responsibilities, including parenting time. Now, an initial custody determination is in direct contrast to a relocation after entry of permanent orders when a primary residential parent seeks to relocate with the child. That's under 1410.129 and Marriage of Cheslick. The district court misapplied the law. It treated an initial allocation of parenting time as a modification and relocation.
So you're saying that the court improperly conflated 1410.124 and 1410.129?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm saying that the trial court merged the two separate provisions and standards applicable to each. The trial court here should have performed a best interest analysis utilizing the factors only in 1410.124 without regard to the party's location. And the analysis then should have determined allocation of parental responsibilities and parenting time for MJ without regard to mother's location in South Dakota. The only time under 124 that the location comes into the picture is under section 8, which is the physical proximity of the parties to each other as this relates to the practical considerations of parenting time.
Now, I'm concerned that in the opening statement, mother's attorney below, and I respect that wasn't you, basically merged the two standards, adopted that portion of father's opening statement, and said that's fine for the court to consider both.
That may be the case, Your Honor, but we are arguing that the trial court did, there was an abuse of discretion here, basically by misapplying the law, and second, in their factual findings, if alternatively the 1410.129 statute does apply, that there was an abuse of discretion as far as the mother's relocation and the reasons for relocating with the child.
Counsel, sorry to interrupt. Would you agree that 1410.124 allows the court to consider other factors other than what are discussed in that statute?
Yes, Your Honor, but I don't think that the factors in 129 are considered if you're just doing a 124 analysis, that the 124 factors do switch over to 129 when you're doing a relocation or a modification of parenting time based on a relocation analysis.
Okay, but why would it be wrong for the court to consider the 129 factors?
Because this was not a modification of parenting time. This was simply an allocation of parental responsibilities, which included a parenting time schedule, and I don't think that 129 came into play here because we're not dealing with a situation where the parties were under a prior decree and the child was already integrated into a parenting time schedule. We're dealing with who should have custody of the child, and then after making that determination, what should be the parenting time based on the best interests of the child. So the trial court's lack of evidence in Micah's interest in living in Colorado. Here, father failed to present information about Micah's interest in living with him or in staying in Denver. And also, he failed to present any parenting time plan, even a parenting time plan that would oppose mother's parenting time plan if allowed to relocate to South Dakota. MJ's personal relationship with her grandparents and her extended family in South Dakota, her assimilation into the tribe and her life on the reservation, her existence of the tribal law, that was all important factors that should have been taken into consideration in a 124 analysis. Other 124 factors that were relevant here was the past pattern of involvement of the parties with the child, whether that reflects a system of values, time commitment, and mutual support. And here, father had minimal attendance at her extracurricular activities. He also planned visits frequently. And the ability of the parties to encourage the sharing of love, affection, and contact between the child and the other party. Mother had continued a good relationship with MJ's paternal grandmother. She had ensured visits with her, and she had also not discouraged MJ's relationship with father. If 1410.
The judge seemed to find to the contrary, didn't he? That she had been dismissive of the father's interest, that her move was intended to interfere with petitioner's desire to remain active in her life. Are you asking us to overturn those findings of facts? Is it erroneous?
Yes, Your Honor, we are saying that those factual findings were an abuse of discretion. A reasonable person, after hearing that testimony, could not come to that conclusion.
Not an abuse of discretion. You're saying they were clearly erroneous, those findings of facts, based on the testimony that was submitted to the before this trial judge in a several-hour hearing?
I think that the findings here were erroneous, and particularly talking about mother's dismissive attitude towards father and the parenting time. And I think if you look at the testimony and evidence that was presented by mother, that no reasonable person could come to that conclusion. And did that answer your question? Okay. Second, if 1410.129, a modification of parenting time, is the correct legal standard, which we don't believe it is, then that case, relocation would still be in the child's best interest. Here, the parents are on an equal burden in demonstrating how the child's best interest will be impacted by the proposed location. And under Cheslick, the moving party, which is the mother here, had a duty to present non-speculative information about the child's living conditions and plan for modifying the parenting time. And it was the father's duty, as contesting the relocation, then to persuade the trial court that that relocation is contrary to the child's best interest. Thus, both parents then share a burden to persuade the court that relocation is or contrary to the child's best interest. Here, father contested the relocation, but he never sought to become the majority time parent. He also did not propose any parenting time plan, including if MJ had relocated to South Dakota or if she continued to live in Denver with the father becoming the majority time parent. And some of the other factors that were relevant under 129, the reasons why the party wishes to relocate with the child. Here are Michael's frequency of visits MJ's frequency of visits to South Dakota and presence on the reservation, living near her extended family. There was also significant evidence that mother had a position with First Nations Oasis Corporation. This job accommodated her school schedule for obtaining a master's degree and maintain her commitment to the American Indian heritage. And one of the trial court's finding is that mother living in South Dakota was a non sequitur. We believe that was an abuse of discretion because mother had asserted that her desire to attend this educational program in Washington, the trial court asserted that mother's desire to attend this program somehow justified her decision in South Dakota. But the factors are that she had a fellowship to go to this program. It was one of the only MBA in American Indian entrepreneurship offered in the country. Her employer, First Nations Oasis Corporation, accommodated her attending that program for the 6 weeks, which her Denver employer did not accommodate. Originally, they did accommodate that, and then when she got accepted, they took back that offer. And she also had daycare arrangements while she'd be attending that program in Washington. And this was evidence that was presented at permanent orders, and it was further explained in the post-trial motions. And some of the other factors relevant under 1410.129, reasons why the opposing party is objecting. Father's only reason is that he wanted more time with MJ. And the educational opportunities, there was evidence presented that mother had found a school for MJ in South Dakota with high-ranking standardized test scores. Father presented no evidence on MJ's school if living with him. Extended family, there was a large number of extended family for MJ living in South Dakota that was presented. Mother has no extended family in Colorado. Father has minimal family here in Colorado, including that MJ has no cousins here in Colorado. And the advantages of the child remaining with the primary caregiver. Well, mother has been the primary caregiver from her birth until present, and the district court's order contained no analysis of the harm that it was cause for MJ to switch primary caretaker roles from mother to father. The impact of the move. Here, MJ knows her extended family in South Dakota well. She visits them frequently. She can be closer to her ethnic and cultural identity. And the parenting time plan proposed by mother offered more parenting time for father. And so a reasonable parenting time schedule, the proposed parenting time schedule proposed by mother offered father more parenting time than he already exercised. Inclusion, I ask that this court would reverse the permanent orders and enforce the parenting time plan proposed by mother. Alternatively, that we remand the decision to apply the correct legal standard based on the evidence that's already been presented. I'd like to reserve my additional time for rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Michael Zawicki. My registration number is 35543, and for the record, the spelling of my last name is Z-Y-W-I-C-K-I. I am here on behalf of the appellee who appears in person and is standing behind me. I heard appellant argue that there's only two issues in this case. However, in the briefs, it is argued that there's actually three issues. First being the application of the correct legal standard. The second being the sufficiency of the evidence. And the third being whether or not the trial court abused its discretion in prematurely ruling on the Rule 59 motion. The standard in this case, Your Honors, is not 1410.124 or 1410.129. It's the best interest of the child. As Justice Furman had indicated previously, the court can consider other factors involved in making a decision as to whether or not it's in the best interest of the child. And the court did in this particular case. It found it has not been demonstrated by a preponderance of the evidence that the move would be in the best interest of the child. And in fact, actually, by reaching the conclusions it had reached, found that father had established that the reasons why mother was intending to relocate was to affect the relationship between the child and the father. And that is a factor the court can consider. Father believes that it's not an error to merge or to refer to both statutes. I am cautioned to use the word merging because I don't believe the court merged. The court, in fact, even said under either statute, using the best interest standard, that the result would have been the same. And Your Honor, we need to look at the plain language of both statutes in reaching that decision. 1410.124, subsection 1.5, specifically states that the court shall consider all relevant factors, including, and then it enumerates the factors. It doesn't say only limited to. It doesn't restrict, in fact, the factors at all. It specifies that the court is to consider all relevant factors, including these following factors. That list is not exhaustive. The trial court has discretion to consider anything as long as it's relevant to the best interest of the child, which is the standard in the initial allocation of parental responsibilities. I don't even believe that's a concession that we're making. That is the standard. And the caution, of course, is, well, then what are the limitations of the trial court and what they can consider in reaching a decision about 124 and the best interest of the child? And that's specified in subsection 2 of 1410.124. And that states that the courts cannot consider conduct that doesn't affect the relationship of the party with the child. So in that respect, 1410.124 is not necessarily, as a metaphor, a blank check for the trial court to write and say we can consider everything, because they can't consider those factors that do not affect the party's relationship with the minor child. Under 1410.129, looking at the plain language of that statute, and in reviewing this case, Your Honor, I was surprised myself to read that it states in 1410.129, despite the fact that it says, as its title, modification of parenting time, it says that the court can make or modify an order granting or denying parental responsibilities, provided it's in the best interest of the child. That statute specifically states that the court can make an order. If the General Assembly only presumed that the trial court could only modify an order and would use 129 in modifying an order, it would not have used the plain language, make an order. That is very significant, assuming then in making an order that there was not an order to exist previously, which in that case may be an initial allocation of parental responsibilities. I'm not advocating that 129 applies in every case in which we're dealing with the best interest. It's only if it's relevant to the case. We deal with this a lot, where one parent or the other chooses to move either during the course or prior to the case being filed. So the court needs to be able to be flexible, the trial court, in considering these factors under 129 in situations in which a parent does intend to relocate. And to constrain the court from being able to refer to those factors would mean that the trial court is not allowed to give effect to the General Assembly's belief. The General Assembly's belief, Your Honor, is established in its opening paragraph in 1410.124. The General Assembly finds and declares that it's in the best interest of all parties to encourage and foster frequent and continuing contact between the parents and the children. And in that, in order to effectuate this goal, the General Assembly urges parents to encourage the love, affection, and contact between the parents. The very same thing the court found mother appellant was trying to interfere with and didn't have the ability to do. And that's why the court found two parenting plans. Referring to 129 as well, the last factor in 129 states that the court can consider any other relevant factors that have to do with the best interest of the child. Now, that presumes that all of the factors above those are, in fact, factors that relate to the best interest of the child. An appellant argues that the court should consider where the child or where the majority parent is going to reside, or where either parent is going to reside at an initial allocation of parental responsibilities. And in this particular case, appellant argues that if the court had done that, they would have had no choice but to order that mom was allowed to relocate to South Dakota and have, as a majority parent, and have parenting time in South Dakota. But the problem with that is that gives a presumption in favor of the majority parent. That's presuming that no matter what, if you're the majority parent and you decide to move during the proceeding, the court's automatically going to grant parenting time with you in that state as a majority parent. That's the key, as the majority parent. That presumption, I believe, has been disposed of. Both people are on equal footing at the time of an initial allocation of parental responsibilities. Either parent could become the majority parent.
Mr. Zawicki, although the counsel for appellant didn't exactly argue this in her oral, she did argue it in the brief. In Spamer, the Supreme Court makes this statement, and they're talking about initial allocation there, or initial custody there. Nothing in the plain language of subsection 124 authorizes a trial court to allocate parenting time by ordering a parent to live in a specific locale. And the last sentence in that paragraph says, while the trial court has authority to consider where the parents live with relation to each other, this authority by its plain language does not extend so far as to allow a court to order a parent to live in a particular or specific location. Did the trial judge do that here in conflict with the Spommer holding?
Your Honor, the court did not in this particular case. In fact, the court was very careful in two ways. First, the court allocated two parenting plans. And the reason why is because the court felt that the factor of mother's inability to encourage and foster this positive relationship between the father and the minor child was so extensive that to allow mother to relocate with the minor child would impact not only the relationship, but was not in the best interest of the child. So much so that the court ordered a second parenting time plan with father as the majority parent. And the reason why is because the court believed that father did have the ability, despite maybe not having that history of the relationships, which the court found, as far as the evidence is concerned, that evidence was skewed by mother's controlling behavior.
So the second plan would be effective if the mother nonetheless decided to relocate. Is that what you're saying?
Correct, Your Honor. That's correct.
She didn't relocate the first parenting plan, so she had the option.
Correct, Your Honor.
So it didn't take away her option to relocate. It just said, I'm giving alternative parenting plans depending on what the outcome of the mother's decision is.
Correct, Your Honor. Okay. The court left that up to mother to decide whether or not she wanted to move. The most important thing is the court did make those orders based on where mother intended on living, because it did order two separate parenting plans. But most importantly, the court considered why mother intended to relocate. And mother admitted on the record she can go to school in Spokane, Washington, and still remain in Colorado. And the court found that the reasons why mother wanted to relocate was to directly impact and interfere with this relationship with the mother.
Excuse me. I mean, if she stays in Colorado, doesn't she have to choose between her job and the college opportunity in Spokane? Whereas if she moves to South Dakota, she can have both that job and the Spokane program?
Your Honor, during the trial, under questioning, appellant could not articulate as to whether or not she had applied for other jobs to see if those two could still remain as they were. Meaning she may not have been able to have the job that she had currently, but she never indicated that she had applied for other employment and was not able to seek other employment that would allow her to attend this 6-week program and still remain employed. So,
but her current employment situation, it's either or. She either stays with that job or she goes to college and loses the job.
That was the information she provided. There was nobody there from the school to testify. There was no exhibits admitted. It was only the testimony of mother. There was not even a letter from her employer indicating that was admitted into evidence that indicated that she would have been fired and not have been able to continue.
Her testimony was uncontroverted.
Okay. That may be the case, Your Honor, but there was also no testimony that indicated that she could have sought other employment to be able to continue to do those same things. And again, I believe the court was focusing on the fact that she's in control of her ability to encourage this relationship between father and the minor child. And in the court's opinion, she has chosen not to encourage that behavior, not encourage the love and affection. And as a result of that, was now forced to make a decision either maintain this job or pick another job and try to go to school or find some other alternatives. So I believe that the decision in this particular instance, Your Honor, as far as what the court reached, was a decision that was within the control of mother, that she had the ability to encourage this relationship. She also had the opportunity to present evidence to the court, and she didn't. At the time that this was scheduled, she was represented by trial counsel, and this was set for a 3-hour matter. And I admit, Your Honors, I use the word relocation as well. There's no question about it. There's a different context for relocation in the sense that we use it in a legal context and what we use in regular everyday language. So that may have been an error to use the language, but I will also note that in the trial management certificate, 1410.129 was also cited in the joint trial management certificate adopted by appellant's counsel at the time. And to note in Spommer, referring previous to that case, the trial court in that particular case found that its decision would have been the same under either 1410.124 or 129. And in reviewing that case, the appellate court found that that was not an abuse of discretion, that in fact the court had applied the correct legal standard, which was the best interest. The error was made in requiring mom to stay in a specific location. But there was not an error by the trial court in the application of the legal standard. And again, trial court referred to both 1410.124 and 129. And in fact, Your Honors, if you look at the factors of 1410.124 and 129, they actually mimic each other. One of the factors in 1410.129 is reasons why the party wishes to relocate with the child. That mimics the factor in 124 of the wishes of the parents. Same with the parent, the reasons why the parent's objecting to the relocation. That again mimics wishes of the parents. So we believe that if you actually look at the factors of 1410.124 and 1410.129, many of the factors, it's another way of saying the same thing. And those factors are the best interest, are used to determine the best interest of the child in a decision in modifying parenting time, and we believe can be used in determining whether or not parenting time, the determination of an initial allocation of parenting time, if one of the parents intends to relocate. And to not do so would be an abuse of discretion. We also don't believe that the trial court erred in ruling on the Rule 59 motion. The evidence that was established and provided by appellant was not information that was presented at the trial court. And there was no reference in Rule 59 that mother could not have presented that evidence at the trial court during permanent orders. And the court, we believe, correctly ruled in denying, not only in not reviewing that information, but in also letting the appellant know that they didn't believe the information to be relevant because it had already made a determination based on the information presented. And the trial court's in the best position to determine credibility, sufficiency of the evidence, and the weight of the evidence. The arguable impact, and I believe Lanes v. Scott had found that it's an abuse of discretion to prematurely rule on a motion that had been filed, a responsive pleading, that had been filed in a timely manner. In this particular case, and in Lanes v. Scott, the defense filed a motion to dismiss. Plaintiff filed a timely response. Court dismissed the case, granting defendant's motion before plaintiffs could respond. In this case, father was not prejudiced. Nobody was prejudiced. The mother was given the opportunity, the last opportunity, by filing a post-trial motion to address the court and to let the court know its concerns. She also had every opportunity during a three-hour trial that the court also indicated would have granted additional time at the beginning of the hearing if either side believed it was necessary. That was never taken up by trial counsel. So mother had every opportunity. She and she alone was the only one that knew she was moving. We didn't know until December of 07 that was going to happen. So she's the one that knew. She could have anticipated that, scheduled additional time, come prepared with additional evidence, come prepared with additional witnesses, and that didn't happen. For those reasons, Your Honor, we do not believe the trial court merged the statutes and believe in every case, even an initial allocation of parental responsibilities, the court must consider the best interest and those factors that are relevant to it. Thank you.
First, Your Honors, very briefly on responding to the Rule 59 motion, we believe that it was a premature denial of that post-trial motion, and the citing of the trial court's Holmes v. Young case, we believe, is misplaced because here mother was not presenting newly discovered evidence that couldn't have been presented at permanent orders. Mother was filing a Rule 59 based on an amendment of findings or an amendment of judgment based on error of law. And the evidence and exhibits that was presented with that post-trial motion went to further explain the testimony presented at permanent orders and documentation to counteract the trial court's finding in the order that her relocation to South Dakota and her desire to move there was a non sequitur reason for moving.
Did she make any showing that evidence and documents could not have been presented at the original hearing?
I don't believe so. I think that there was a question asked of her by opposing counsel regarding documentation on her school, And she said that it was presented to her attorney, and she wasn't sure whether that was given to the other side. On the best interest of the child, here, counsel is merging the two statutes together and trying to say that the trial court did not err simply because they gave two parenting time plans. One, mother living in Denver with MJ, and the second, if mother relocates to South Dakota. Well, this second parenting time plan restricted mother's parenting time significantly to 6 weeks of parenting time, and it also then in essence infringed on her right to travel and take up that opportunity in South Dakota, and it then in essence had an inability for father to foster the relationship with mother and MJ. And second, there was the only evidence that mother had the inability to foster the relationship with father was a statement that she made to the grandmother, not to MJ, regarding a canceled visit that father did. I see I'm out of time. Thank you, Your Honors.
We appreciate the arguments of both counsel. The case stands submitted. Counsel are excused. We will issue a written opinion in due course. That completes our docket for this morning, and the bailiff may announce that the court is in recess.